the state assembly has passed a proposed constitutional amendment that would weaken the governor's partial veto powers. It's Wednesday, February 21st, and this is Wisconsin Today. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up, Sarah Lear has the details on a bill also approved in the assembly that would hold students back a grade for repeated truancy. And a civil rights icon lives right here in Wisconsin. We'll learn more in today's Wisconsin Life. Stay with us.
You tune in every weekday for your dose of local news on Wisconsin Today. You enjoy headlines with context as well as a longer story. This news is community supported. Join in with your gift at wpr.org/givewitoday.
Wisconsin is the only state where governors can use a partial veto to cross out individual words or punctuation. As Anya Van Wagtendonk reports, that power would be weakened under a proposed constitutional amendment that passed the state assembly yesterday.
Wisconsin's unique partial veto has led to maneuvers like one last year, when Governor Tony Evers nixed numbers and a hyphen in the state budget. That extended school funding for 402 years instead of 2 years. The proposal that passed the assembly would make it unconstitutional to use the power to add or increase taxes. Representative Amanda Nedweski, a Republican from Pleasant Prairie, said it's about maintaining separation of powers.
The governor is not a legislature and should not be abusing the partial veto to act as a legislator.
To take effect, the plan would have to pass the full legislature 2 sessions in a row and then be approved by voters. It would not be subject to a veto. Anya Van Wagtendonk, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A package of Republican tax cuts has passed the state Senate and now heads to Governor Tony Evers' desk. The 4 bills would expand Wisconsin's second lowest income tax bracket, so individuals making more money would pay a lower rate. They would also exclude the first $75,000 of retirement income from state taxation, increase a tax credit for married couples, and expand a tax credit for child care expenses. Ahead of the Senate vote, Republican Majority Leader Devin Lemahue said with an unused $3 billion state surplus, it's time to send the money back.
It's the taxpayers' money. It's time to give that money back to the taxpayers of Wisconsin, provide true and meaningful tax relief for all of Wisconsin's hardworking families. We'll still have a $1 billion surplus going into the next budget if we pass this.
Democratic critics said the overall package showed that Republicans only cared about tax cuts for the wealthy. Of all the bills, only the child care credit proposal got widespread bipartisan support. Governor Tony Evers has said he could support that proposal. Bills that would ease licensing requirements for some Wisconsin educations are now headed to the governor's desk. As Sarah Lear reports, Wisconsin's Republican-controlled legislature approved the proposals yesterday.
One bill would eliminate the requirement that a district superintendent hold an administrator's license from Wisconsin's Department of Public Instruction. Currently, that license requires things like an advanced degree and at least 6 semesters of teaching experience. Some Democrats raised concerns about lowered standards, but Republican Representative Shea Sortwell says school boards should have flexibility.
Let's pass a good common sense bill and let people be hired who the school district thinks will do a good job.
Another bill approved Tuesday is aimed at the paraprofessionals who assist teachers in a classroom. It would create a path for them to become teachers without meeting certain requirements, such as having a bachelor's degree. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Meanwhile, a legislative council of educators was tasked with choosing the curriculum public and private schools would use to teach children how to read, but the Department of Public Instruction has made its own recommendations to lawmakers. In a letter sent to the Joint Finance Committee this week, DPI officials said the Literacy Council did not fully complete its job. DPI said the group did not spend enough time studying the curriculum when they recommended 4 products. Kate Kazubaski served on the Literacy Council. She says she feels like she wasted her time since DPI did not listen to the group's recommendations.
But I know that when change happens, it's hard for some people, and I know that sometimes the final outcome is not what you expect it will be.
DPI has asked the Joint Finance Committee to consider 11 new reading curricula. New teaching programs are being chosen as part of a sweeping bill passed last summer that will overhaul how children are taught to read. Only 40% of Wisconsin third graders are proficient in reading right now. Coming up, we'll learn about the youngest member of a civil rights group that participated in the Freedom Summer in 1964. That's in today's Wisconsin Life. Stay with us.
Thank you to the donors who make Wisconsin Public Radio possible. There are more than 50,000 of you. Your generosity delivers essential news, thought-provoking conversations, and inspiring music to listeners all over Wisconsin and beyond. Your support makes a difference in people's lives every day. Thank you.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's former executive producer Erica Janik with a story about a civil rights icon who lives here in Wisconsin.
Gwen Gillen now calls Madison home, but her roots are in the South, where she fought for civil rights. Jeff Burkhardt brings us her story.
Civil rights leader Stokely Carmichael called her a gutsy little sister. At 17, Gwen Gillen became the youngest staff member of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Now, the retired teacher calls Madison home, but she grew up in Anniston, Alabama, one of seven children.
My first memory is that three-room shack, and oftentimes when you see old movies of the South and the slave huts, you see these three-room shacks where we didn't have electricity. We had candle lights at night, and there was no refrigerator, and the iceman used to come around. So we pretty much had the same meal every day until I graduated. From high school, we had beans and cornbread.
Later, they moved to Bear Mash at the foot of the Appalachians, where they picked plums and blueberries, and they had electricity and running water. Gwen's mother was one of the people who petitioned the local government for it.
She worked as a maid, but she insisted that we go to school every day. You couldn't make the law a C. She wanted a B or an A. During my senior year, I got chosen to for a full scholarship to go to Tougaloo College in Tougaloo, Mississippi.
It was there at Tougaloo College in 1963 that she met members of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
When I got to Tougaloo, I met the civil rights people, and I asked them, well, how can I be a part of the movement? And they said, well, you can join us. And so I dropped out of Tougaloo College in about 2 weeks after being there and joined the civil rights movement and became a staff member of SNCC.
Gwen later went to Oberlin College in preparation for the Freedom Summer of 1964.
We weren't making any progress, so to speak, just sitting on in at lunch counters and stuff like that. So we thought the best thing to do was to register people to vote.
On the first day of Freedom Summer, June 21st, 1964, three young civil rights workers were murdered. They, like Gwen, had been registering black voters in Mississippi. The men were arrested by the police on trumped-up charges and then released after dark into the hands of the Ku Klux Klan.
We went hunting for them in Neshoba County, and we would go in at night in black clothing and walk around the bushes and stuff and see if we could find them. I think they found them about a week or two later. It was frightening, but we had to do something.
Gwen continued to work for SNCC for the next 2 years. Then in 1966, she was offered a scholarship to the UW-Madison.
And I personally wanted to understand American history. I was a person and an American, and I didn't feel I should be treated any different than anybody else. And I just couldn't understand why they did that.
She studied American history, as she planned, and eventually got a degree in special education. She continued to be active in the civil rights movement on campus and in Milwaukee. Gwen's time fighting for civil rights in Alabama, Mississippi, and Wisconsin helped her understand herself and the importance of political participation.
I learned that you should vote every time. I think that voting matters.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life on our website, wisconsinlife.org, and on Facebook. I'm Erica Janik.
And that'll do it for this Wednesday. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Alex Crow. Mallory Chang, great to have her back. She was a producer today, as well as John Davis. We'll be right back in that podcast feed tomorrow. So until then, hit subscribe, tell a friend, and have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you again soon.